A lot of what we discovered in our research is that it's not like there are two camps. One camp is for women and one camp is against women. We all want the body to be healthy and strong, and everybody loves and values women. We just have to be clear on how we're leading our cultures to make sure we're inviting women to the tables we want them to be at, that we're helping everyone, men and women, discover their gifts and live out their calling, and that we as church leaders are stewarding those callings and their impact in the kingdom through our local church to the best that we can and to get the most out of who God has brought us.
Hey guys, Frank here with another episode of Modern Church Leader. Excited to talk to an amazing guest who actually is back for her second time. You're one of very few people who have come around twice. So,
Thank you. I'm very honored.
Katie Cole, it's great to have you in the house.
Thank you so much for having me. I loved our last conversation and I'm really looking forward to today as well.
I know. Last time we had Dean here too, which, you know, it's kind of turned into a one-man thing just because it's a bit easier, I think. But it was definitely fun. And I'm excited to just talk a little bit about what you're into in this kind of, I don't know if it's post-COVID. I literally don't know what to call it. Like somebody's going to come up with a term that works. I haven't found it yet, but we're in this.
We'll call it 2022. How's that? Everyone will get that.
we're in 2022. Like we were talking about before this, you know, the world paused, felt like for a couple of years, but here we are. And, you know, you've been trucking. So I'd love just for sort of new folks or folks that maybe didn't see the first episode, you know, who are you? What do you do exactly? How are you helping church leaders and churches from kind of your position?
Thank you. Well, I have served in full-time ministry for over 20 years. I originally was a nurse, but got recruited by my fast-growing church to join the team. It's been a wonderful ride. Our church grew really fast, and I kind of got to experience different parts of church elements just trying to solve problems as we were growing and scaling. And then a few years ago, I transitioned off my full staff role to work with Leadership Network and some other crew to do more consulting work. And in the process, came across this topic about female leadership, which you'd think I would have thought of this beforehand because I was actually a female leader in church spaces for a long time. But we were running into this challenge / opportunity as we figured out growth plans and leadership development pipelines that we were just missing out on a lot of our leadership capacity in churches across the world, but mostly North America. And we didn't really know why. Women wanted to lead more. Churches wanted them to do that. And so I did a big research project and wrote a book and now speak a lot about how to develop female leaders in our churches, what we can do as individual leaders, as organizations. And most recently started working with a lot more women on how to step into those roles with confidence and enjoy the gift of leadership in local church. Sometimes it doesn't always feel like a gift. So we're working on that.
Has anything in with respect to all that, you know, COVID and all of the, you know, social things, political things, like lots has happened in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the kind of climate change as it relates to women in leadership? And is it getting easier? Is there more acceptance? Is it harder? I don't know.
It's been interesting. Yeah, there was a lot of momentum around this topic going into COVID, like pre-COVID, because we had the Me Too movement. We had the Church Too movement. There was a lot of talk around it. And then, of course, in the middle of the pandemic, America went through a huge racial reconciliation space, which kind of brings topics of diversity and bias to the forefront. I was really excited about those conversations. And then I think people started to move into long-term crisis mode where we really had the capacity to only deal with the challenge right in front of us. The great thing for the topic of female leadership, though, and more equity in our leadership circles is that a lot of women did amazing jobs leading through the pandemic. Mm-hmm. They were in key essential roles, communications, worship, programming, hospitality, or, you know, membership classes, small groups. Those are tend to be places that women have a lot of invitations to serve in local churches. And those became key issues to reinvent and keep bodies together during a time when we couldn't meet on the weekend anymore. So even though a lot of times women are not invited to be on the platform on Sunday morning, a lot of the core ministries of body life have a lot of female leadership in them. And I just saw women step up in incredible ways, be very dedicated. Even now during the great resignation and the great reshuffle, I find that in the churches I'm working with, women are
the great resignation. I just want to I hadn't heard that. So maybe we can, I'm going to store that away and we can talk about
that. We can talk about that more. Yeah. Everyone kind of took COVID and reevaluated their life in multiple ways. For the most part, I found most women are staying put and leading at even higher levels. And a lot of that is because we haven't come into leadership in traditional ways. We started serving at the church we loved and we're a member and our family was a part of, and we're there because we love the mission and the people and the community and we're called to that place. And so that doesn't really change when everyone else changes their jobs and moves around. Your home is your home. And so it's been fun for me to watch that women kind of stand strong and be the steady in the midst of a lot of dynamic change in most churches.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want this to come across the wrong way, but like, you know, I've been married for almost 20 years. We have three boys. I don't know what we would do without like mom. Right. And like, it's not leadership in the sense like we're talking about, but I mean, I just see, we have some amazing women leaders at Tithely. And I see it in my wife. I'm like God made women absolutely amazing. And I actually think like, if we didn't have some of the women leaders at Tithely, if I didn't have like my wife, like things would fall apart, absolutely fall apart. And so it's just, I don't know. It's shocking that, women in leadership is like even a thing. Cause it should, I don't know. It should just be more natural and easy. Like, guys should see how awesome women are.
I'd like to clarify kind of early in the podcast here for anyone who's about to turn us off. I think my position on this, I come from leadership and training and development background. And so I'm not taking on a theological position on this. What I really am interested in is helping people live out their theology to the fullest. And a lot of what we discovered in our research is that it's not like there are two camps. One camp is for women and one camp is against women. We all want the body to be healthy and strong, and everybody loves and values women. We just have to be clear on how we're leading our cultures to make sure we're inviting women to the tables we want them to be at, that we're helping everyone, men and women, discover their gifts and live out their calling, and that we as church leaders are stewarding those callings and their impact in the kingdom through our local church to the best that we can and to get the most out of who God has brought us. These are people in, you know, are a form of resource. And a lot of times we just sort of leave money sitting on the back porch and we don't actually utilize it and multiply it for the kingdom. And so I'm on a mission to try and help churches think differently about how they live out their theology and make sure they're not missing accidentally a lot of who God has brought them to really advance their church and fulfill the mission God's given them.
Right. Yeah. No, I love that. Absolutely love that. You mentioned a little bit ago, and even as we were talking before, like, so there's, you know, these roles are, you know, women are getting into these roles. We've gone through some crazy times, but there's like new challenges that they might be facing, like stepping into those bigger leadership roles or, you know, continuing on in that leadership role once they figure out what that actually means in their context. So like what are some of the challenges that you've seen and how are you seeing, you know, churches work through those?
Right. So when I wrote my first published book called Developing Female Leaders in 2019, we were seeing just amazing movement. Like I kind of thought I was going to get, you know, lambasted on social media and not invited anywhere to speak. And you know, the exact opposite happened. I was so thrilled and proud of the body for wanting to embrace this conversation and sort of, in fact, the tagline of the book is navigate the minefield, right? It's a huge hot topic. It's difficult to talk about. It's personal. It's emotional. We all have different views on it. And we all know women who are passionate about it, which makes it sometimes harder to deal with. And so I was just so thrilled with how many churches embraced the best practices in the book, who wanted to move this conversation forward, who wanted to maximize the women God had brought them, who wanted the women in their own life, great and amazing pastoral leaders who wanted the women in their own life to have stronger places in ministry. And so that was really fun for a couple of years, kind of till we all shut down and got sidetracked. But it was really well received. And we had a lot of women get raises, be licensed for ministry, be acknowledged for the work and the leadership they had been giving for sometimes years that was under recognized. But as we started seeing doors open for women, as male teams were making room for women at some of the highest levels of leadership, women were taking those steps forward. And what I'm really seeing now is kind of the reality of what it's like when you're the first woman or the only woman in some of these leadership spaces. And it's hard sometimes to recognize if you haven't been the only or the first of something, mm-hmm. just the sort of emotional energy it requires and the amount of unaware bias or resistance or feeling left out or being left out or just not being a part of the team. We've all, I'm sure, been a part of a team, like the new person on the team. It's that times like 100. And so I'm working a lot with women now because they're in these leadership roles and they're sort of asking the question, which I completely understand, which is like, I'm not really sure this is worth it. Like, I thought it was going to be fun. I thought it was going to be great and kind of beyond the normal hardship of ministry, because ministry isn't always easy. Teamwork it's isn't hard, yeah. always fun. There's conflict. There's, you know, it's hard work. We're in a very difficult time now, but it should be satisfying. It should feel safe. We should be able to show up and express our ideas. We should be able to leave work at the end of the day and not spend hours questioning what we did or what we said or what we didn't say. Mm-hmm. And I just find that because most women who are ready to be leaders right now didn't grow up in a ministry system that was supportive and nurturing of their gifts and talents. They grew up in a professional leadership space, or they're new to leadership now. They don't always have the same kind of skill sets or tools in their toolbox that let them navigate those pieces that we experience on high level leadership teams. And so I'm working a lot more with women on how to step into those roles with confidence, how to use your leadership voice, how to figure out what your leadership voice is, how to know when you should stand up and really fight and advocate for something, and when is the time that you should hold back and not do that. It's very confusing, and women in today's world have a lot of pressure to, you know, let your voice be heard. And I want women's voices to be heard if God is calling you to use your voice. But as Christians, we know, you know, there were many times Jesus was quiet or silent or didn't defend himself or didn't speak up or didn't advocate for someone, as much as there were times where he was called to do that. And so we want to make sure we're not just going from one extreme, which is my voice is not welcome, to the other extreme, which is my voice must be heard everywhere I go all day long. Neither one of those are helpful nor godly and good in leadership. So we're all learning how to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love just connecting it to Jesus. Like all of us men and women, right? We're as Christians called to follow him. And in whatever context, like that should be our kind of ultimate goal. And reminding men and women, right? Like that's the point, like not to be the strong person in the room or whatever it may be. Yeah, that's super cool. I mean,
and yet we want to have strength. Like that's the hard part, right? It's like we want to be this and not be this kind of these double binds, and navigating that is something you have to grow into. And it's not unique to leadership, but it definitely is consistent in your daily leadership role.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the biggest breakthroughs that you've seen, like either church staffs or male leaders welcoming in female leaders, or you know, female leaders coming in and you're like, I don't know, what are some of the cool things that you've just seen happen? Like, give us some good stories.
Well, I got to say, I know this sounds materialistic, but I actually think one of the biggest breakthroughs we're seeing in lots of churches all across the country is just pay equity. It sounds like that should be a no-brainer. And to most people, they're like, oh, good, she got a raise. But for a female leader to know she is earning the same amount as her male counterparts, when traditionally in the church world, we earn 72 cents to the dollar to men who are in same roles as us. It is huge. And if you think that's almost a 30% raise that your female counterparts have gotten, if you got a 30% raise this year, what that would do to change your life, to change your lifestyle. And we aren't even talking like boats and designer shoes. We're doing things like I can hire a housekeeper now to come in two times a month. So I am not spending my one day off a week cleaning toilets in my own house, right? Women carry this kind of double load. We can actually eat dinner out on a Friday night after a big long work week. I don't have to also go home and figure out how to make a great meal for all of us for cheap. I'm not clipping coupons on Sunday afternoon after work. I get to actually sit and hang out with my kids and enjoy time with them. So there's this double shift that women, especially female leaders, tend to do, where they work a full shift at work and then they get off work and they go home and they work a double shift, a second shift, housekeeping, family care, kids care. In COVID, it was also online education. And so having equal pay
that was
and being
hard.
Yeah. I keep saying, like, I would love nothing more than to have a pastor's wife myself at home who was doing all those things for me. That sounds like an amazing life. Well, when you pay women equitably to have leadership roles, they get to actually outsource and buy what a lot of the guys have experienced their entire leadership career. And that is a major game changer. You get a good night's sleep. You wake up refreshed. You have time to think about work when you're not working and come up with a creative idea. So that is a huge game changer. And a lot of times it's costs the church and the team and the culture very little for the payoff. And so I just think it's one of those things we have to really, I encourage leaders to, if you do nothing else, just pop the hood on your HR spreadsheet and make sure you're paying everybody equitably.
Yeah.
I would say the second thing,
But no, keep going. I asked the question, so you got another story. I love it.
Well, I was just going to say the second thing I see is churches really working hard to put women on their executive team. There is something about putting a female on your leadership team that just changes the dynamics. The diversity ratio we're looking for, actually, that I want to encourage churches to work for, you don't need to feel pressure that 50% of your team needs to be women and 50% need to be, you know, ethnic minority and 50% need to be over 60 years old. Like, you can't do all that, but yeah, the ratio we're looking for is 30 to 40% is not like the majority. So if your leadership team is like most churches in America, it's like 40-year-old white guys with a beard and dark glasses and probably wearing a hat. So like those, no, just joking, Frank, but you are the classic guy. You got some you have like a tattoo hidden beneath that sleeve somewhere.
I have no tattoos. I never got there, you know?
One day you'll be a cool pastor. So, but if you can just get 30% of your leadership team to be not that, right, filled with women, a different race, a different age, then you're really beginning to create diversity and giving people permission that they can see themselves at leadership in your church. And so I've just seen churches work really hard to put some great women into key roles like that, and simply sitting at the table and showing up today every work and giving your opinion and being in charge of a big part of the church changes the dynamic around this topic for everyone else who's watching.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. What are some of the like common like resistance points that you get when you share that kind of information? Like, to me, it just is logical. Like you sort of pay people for the job, not based on who they are, what they look like or anything like that. Right. Like that's kind of standard. But I get that that's not always how it's been. So whether it's pay or position or title, what are some of the big obstacles that you run into? That, you know, things that you're, that maybe people don't even realize are there, right? I'm not saying like, I think everyone is maliciously doing things, but it feels like almost helping them see that, like where they're missing so that they can work on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of times, two factors. First is we look at the women on our team, and because they haven't had as many opportunities as some of the guys, it's easy to assume they can't do the job. Or they aren't as experienced enough, or we don't have a woman that we could put on our leadership team, right? They don't have the capacity, they don't have the experience. And that is true a lot of times. I would just challenge that I wouldn't let the product of your culture keep you from changing your culture. And even if you wanted to put women on task force or have them lead something that's not a like a permanent position, that if you say yes to it, you know, you're locked in for 20 years and you have someone on your team you wish would go away. Like, I don't want that to happen. But you can elevate women to leadership or test them out or give them opportunity. Even if you said 1 year from now, we will have someone ready to be on our leadership team. That is 100% possible. It may not be the person that you would like go do a search committee through all of the United States ministers and find the perfect person, but having someone grown from within, having someone who knows your culture, having someone you know and trust, having someone who carries the heartbeat of your church, who knows people and has relational equity, that is worth 10 times as much as someone with more degrees or more experience or more input and baggage from another place. So I just encourage churches, if you feel like you're afraid of making a mistake or looking bad or having something go wrong, I would just encourage you, you're not doing it all that great right now either. So it's not like you're going from perfection to risk. You're in a risky situation now also. So which risk do you want to take? Risk on the person that's in your church, or take a risk that you're avoiding and missing out on opportunity to really move your church forward in this topic?
Yeah.
So that's probably the number one thing. I think the second thing is we tend to have some leftover mentalities from sort of the 50s and 60s in our hiring practices in ministry. And we see this a lot in younger churches and church plants that don't have a lot of money or not a lot of resources. And you're sort of just paying people the minimum you have to get them to come on board. People are making big sacrifices, and we tend to pay people based on their life situation, not based on their value or professional credibility. And so when we have that mindset and we look at hiring women, a lot of times people will look at a woman and be like, well, she's got a husband who works full time, who's a doctor. So she probably doesn't need that much money. We'll just pay her 20 grand instead of 60 grand, which is really what this role is worth, because she doesn't really need it. Or she's just going to tithe it back anyway, or whatever excuse we kind of look at. And I would just encourage that mentality. First of all, we'll get you sued. And secondly, just isn't a healthy way to value leadership. I feel exactly the same way when you hire a pastor who has seven children and you pay him more than the pastor who has no children, because this guy's married, he's supporting a family, and our heart goes out to him. And we're like, we want to help him be able to afford, you know, hopefully birth control or whatever. But instead, we just say he has a lot of expenses. This single guy, new seminary grad, has very little expenses. So we're going to pay them what they need rather than pay them what they're worth.
Right.
And that's really what equity comes to, is like, we want to pay people for their impact, for their value, for their worth, not based on these circumstances that they either decided or didn't decide for themselves.
Right. Yeah. No, that's it makes sense. I mean, it has me even thinking about just, it's like churches and businesses are on one hand very different, but when it comes to, you know, HR and taking care of your people and how you pay and the compensation packages and benefits and all that kind of stuff, like they're very similar, right? Just in terms of making sure that you've got good policy and structure, and it's not sort of like just based on who you're talking to, right? Like you.
Right. Yeah, it's a stewardship issue. It's an integrity issue. I mean, I think churches have sort of played the card of like, what can we get away with? And I would just really challenge, as Christians, and especially as church leaders, we should be the best bosses in the world. We should honor and value people better than the business world. Yeah. And if we're trying to find our standards of morality and integrity based on what the law demands of us, that is a very low bar of how we treat our employees.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Okay. I know you do other stuff. It's not all just about, you know, women and leadership and all that, although, you know, you have tons of great experience and have done amazing work. But you also just, you help churches with things like succession planning and multi-site, and you do consulting around a lot of different things at the leadership level. I'd love to talk about your work in any of those areas, but just as it relates to kind of coming out of COVID and churches, every church on the planet was impacted. Most of the churches I talk to are saying, oh, yeah, maybe we're about 60% of the people that are back in the building, however they define that. And it's different, and we're in a different kind of world. I just would love your take on what you're hearing, what you're seeing, and, you know, how you're helping churches kind of get through that or come out of, you know, the COVID situation.
Yeah. So the way I got into female leadership is I work with organizational development. I work with leadership development pipelines. And we sort of stumbled into this issue of like just not maximizing the potential of female leaders. And that became a really key strategy to move churches forward in their mission. Yeah. And so on kind of the bigger umbrella of that topic, I do think COVID, the quarantine, and sort of the reshuffling of people's priorities and pace of life and how they think about community has really challenged our kind of modern church mindset. I'm someone who lives a little bit in the future. I'm thrilled about this. I know most people are kind of scared about it, but in my mind, I had felt like the Lord was trying to get our attention around things like spiritual formation, or the celebrity status of pastors, or the way we've centered everything around Sunday mornings. I feel like God has been trying to get our attention to rethink those things for about 20 years, and we were slow to do it and oftentimes resistant. And he just sort of took us by the face mask in COVID and said, wake up, I'm going to demand that you look at body life differently than who shows up on Sunday and how many people give money. And so I think the churches that are doing the best work now, and the ones, usually the ones that I end up working with, are trying to figure that out. They're trying to reinvent. They're trying to see, you know, where the hockey puck is going and anticipate what God is doing and move their ministries and their leadership and their vision towards what God is sort of recalibrating in our day. So I'm excited about that. I think I don't think we know what the new model is going to be. You know, Sunday service centricity has been around for 400 or 500 years. And I think we have yet to see what the new kind of church trend will be. But I believe the people who are going to do it are in our churches right now. I think the young people that we see coming up, the digital natives, people who think of community differently, I think they're going to be a part of reestablishing what that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Are there any common themes, like kind of conversations that you seem to be having repeatedly with people?
Yeah, I think the online church thing, I know, has a lot of debate around it. I don't think online church is the future, but I think digital connection and global perspective are two of the things that we have to have a mindset around. Churches were already going global before COVID. Our multi-site strategies, most of the progressive churches and multi-site were launching campuses internationally. Our ability to kind of morph our missions work with our church planting and multi-site work and have that overlap and learn from each other has been really critical. Some of the most innovative discipleship experiences and spiritual formation programmatic elements I'm seeing in churches right now are inspired by work from campuses in Africa or Latin America, because they just do community and relationships differently than we do in America. These are places who aren't lonely at epidemic levels. And so that life-on-life discipleship just has a completely different connotation for them. And a lot of U.S. churches are learning from that and being schooled by that. So I think that global perspective is one of the biggest things. I think one of the things around attendance and giving is that I don't know that these numbers are accurately portraying the reality of what's happening in our churches. In my experience, even though giving tends to be static right now in most churches, that is not something I think we can count on. For the most part, giving is the last activity of a disciple to pull out from church. Mm-hmm. Attendance, engagement, serving, friendships, and then giving. And so even though we see those numbers sticking, a lot of times we find a lot of confidence. If our giving's up, we think everybody's in. I don't think that's a good indicator for the future.
I think it's held, but I actually, and this is anecdotal just based on here and there kind of conversations, but it seems like some of the financial impact is only just now starting to like creep in there, right? Like,
well, I think people have been propped up by PPP, businesses and churches. As that starts to go away and as our economy starts to get, have some cracks in it, we're going to see some downward decline, even though a lot of people are working to try and slow that down. It's kind of inevitable. And so it's going to be interesting to see where that really shakes out over the next 5 years or so.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you seeing, like, most churches I talk to are in that, like, 60% are kind of back? Like, what do you
on
hearing?
Attendance?
Yeah, like weekend attendance, you know.
Yeah, I would say it varies. I know some churches that have actually grown during COVID. They either, you know, combined campuses and got new momentum, or they were in a state that had very lax mask mandates. And so they had congregations that continued to grow. So some churches are back or growing. Most churches, though, I think are around that 60%. Somewhere between 50 and 60 is the most common. I always wonder about the 60% because pastors are really great at rounding up.
And absolutely.
I'm not really sure where that's landing. But I do think the piece that you know, makes it complicated is we do have a lot of folks that are engaging online. We don't have great ways of measuring that. Everyone's got a different viewpoint of it. I just think it's going to be interesting to see how our definitions change over the next few years and how our strategies develop and what we consider engaged and a part of the body, how we really define that moving forward.
I mean, the whole like hybrid church and church online and all of that stuff being part of the mix, however it takes shape, but it's there and it's a thing and it's something all churches are like. Do you do a lot of work or get in those conversations with churches to help them figure some of that out or execute on a strategy that, you know, is kind of new to them?
Yeah, one of the challenging things is that it's very generationally based. You can kind of see people's engagement based on their age, which there's very few things in our culture that are really dictated by age anymore. It's usually culture or experience or where you live in the country. And so, you know, one of the biggest lessons that I talk a lot about with churches is that people who are sort of my age, I'm a full-on Gen Xer. So people from like maybe your late 40s and older, we tend to, if we're embracing technology, we usually use technology as a way to support the relationships we already have. So like, you know, my family lives across the country. I know them well. Obviously, we get together on holidays, all that. But in the meantime, like during COVID and even now, we do Zoom game nights. You know, I talk to my dad, you know, through FaceTime, like all those things happen. Yeah. And it supports a relationship that already exists. I'm connected through Facebook and Instagram to like my high school friends and my college friends. If we didn't have social media, I probably wouldn't be connected to most of those people. And that is a huge add to my life. I love that I can connect with almost anyone from my past within a couple of minutes, as long as I can remember their name. Right. It supports that. Now, my son is 18 years old, and I would say really young millennials and younger, they actually initiate relationships online and then move to physical relationships. So when my son started high school, he was the only person he knew at the high school. He'd been in a small private school. He went to a big honors high school in our county. He drives 45 minutes. So he doesn't really live anyone, you know, near anyone. No one from his school went there. He didn't know anybody. And he watched people log in on Snapchat and on Instagram. And he followed people online without talking to a soul at that high school for probably 3 months. And he was vetting, who did he want to be friends with? Who was posting things that didn't align with his values? Who was friends with who? And what was he observing in class? But what were they doing online? What games were they playing? What were they into? What were their hobbies? And he narrowed a field of, you know, 2,000 kids down to like six people he wanted to become friends with. And they are very amazing friends. And, you know, I'm having all these concerns about a mom. He's my only kid. So, of course, I'm a helicopter mom. And I've got all these concerns about digital things. I'm like, why aren't you talking to people? Who are you sitting with at lunch? Because, you know, I'm like, it's breakfast club. You don't have any friends. And he's like, Mom, just slow down. I'm finding my friends. And these are the best quality kids. Like, they're just amazing kids. None of them look like him. They're from totally different races, totally different parts of the county. They have different economic levels from us, both higher and lower. He chose them based on who they actually are and what they revealed about themselves online. And it was such a lesson for me because it was completely backwards. But I'll tell you what, he's better at finding friends than I am. Like, I become friends really quick with people, and it takes me 6 months to realize they're crazy or a racist or something dumb. Yeah. He weeded them out in the first week. I'm like, I need to probably learn a bit from this strategy.
That's some skill right there. I'm impressed. Right?
So I think when I talk with churches about digital, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking that you have to have virtual church or we'll never see each other, or how do you provide the sacraments over a screen? I'm talking about how you discover your people, how you weed out community, how you find your tribe. And if we can teach people how to find that, how to even talk about their faith online so other Christians can find them, like it's just a different way of navigating relationships. It's a different way of building community, and it's a different way of experiencing the body of Christ from a different doorway. And that's all it is, all heading to the same place, but a different doorway to get there. Now, I believe Jesus is the only way, just to clarify that. It's a different kind of door to Jesus. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. No one freak out and email me.
Too good. One last quick question, somewhat related to all that. This is like way, way out on the edge, but you said you like to live in the future. Church in the metaverse. Any thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we have yet to even imagine what church is going to be like. And I take it back even just 100 years, you know, where we didn't really even have telephones in every house. There was no TV. Like, how would we explain to someone who was, you know, only alive up until like 1900, like an adult in 1900, how would we explain to them what church was going to be like in these multi-site things and with big bands? And like, I think they would look at that and be like, where's the organ? How can you possibly have church without, you know, whatever it was that was sacred to them there? And so part of it, I think, is we just have to realize the story of church is really big and very historical, and it has gone through so many metamorphoses. And we are just a part of this blip in God's story right now. And we're limited by what we know, by what's in the past, and we can't see into the future, but we have to hold it open-handedly. And so I think the metaverse is worth exploring. I think engaging it, I think experimenting with it, I think trying some things out is how we innovate. We're sort of in the messy middle right now. We're in the cloudy, foggy time, and we don't yet see where what it's going to be, but we know what it's not going to be anymore. And the best way to steward the messy middle is to experiment. Within the boundaries of sin and righteousness, anything is possible. And so the more, especially those of us in leadership who are a little older, the more we can experiment, the more we can encourage younger people to take steps, and we can fund them and hire them and pay them to spend a year trying to do something in ministry we've never thought of before. Just the trial, just the experimentation, just the idea that gets out there in other people's minds is what's going to help innovate the church and move it forward faster.
Love that. Love that. Okay. I got three quick questions. Well, two really. Give me, this is sort of rapid fire. What's a book that you read that everybody needs to read? Just one that's had a big, and it can't be the Bible or a book you wrote.
Oh, I would never say a book I wrote. Hands down, overall, Necessary Endings by Henry Cloud is the best leadership book. It talks about when it's time to leave someplace, but it also talks about when it's time to stay someplace. And I've read it through 7 times. 6 of the 7 times, it's convinced me I need to stay longer than I want to. And only 1 of the 7 times could I see clearly it was time for me to move on.
It's called
Necessary. And that to me feels like the right book, huh?
It's Necessary or Unnecessary? Yeah,
it's called Necessary Endings.
Necessary Endings. Mm-hmm. Okay, got it.
When is an ending necessary?
Yeah. Love it. Okay. What's a podcast you're listening to right now?
I really like the podcast Leaders Are Readers. They he interviews authors of books and you get the main idea of their book. I love it because I feel like I read a book every time I go through the interview, and it helps me know which books I want to buy and actually really dive into, and which ones I just want the big concept and then I'm good.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Katie, this has been great. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Frank. I appreciate it. Great to see you again.
Yeah, yeah. Where, just real quick before we end, where can folks go to learn more about you?
Sure. 2 places. My website, katiecole.com, KADICOLE.com. And then on socials at Katie Cole.
Love it. Easy. You got them all, huh?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I know. Started to see future. I did that like 25 years ago.
That's amazing. So good. Well, appreciate it. And thanks, guys, for tuning in. Appreciate you guys. And we'll see you next week on another episode of Modern Church Leader. Bye-bye.